Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
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 2014 in Radadesh, Belgium, and we're looking at the 26 qualities of a devotee. So this is from Madhulila, chapter 22, text 80, from Srimad Bhagavatam, chapter 5, canto 5, chapter 18, text 12, canto 11, chapter 11, 29 to 32. Also Srimad Bhagavatam, canto 4, chapter 20, text 16, and Srimad Bhagavatam, canto 2, chapter 3, text 13. I think all of you have one of these.
Huh? So,
there weren't enough copies, so everybody can be friendly and share. So one of the seven purposes of this time is to bring the members closer to the prime entity, Krishna, and closer to each other. So you can get closer to each other and share your papers. Now this is all, we're going to look at all 26. We're going to look generally at the qualities, and then we'll look at whichever ones of the 26 qualities people here would like to look at. So we'll just have a general overview of the qualities of the devotee, and then whichever quality anybody would like to examine. So what you can see on these papers, what we've done here, and for those of you who are scholars, sorry that we took out the diacritics. We could put them back in and then do this as a PDF. Then we had the diacritics that ended up getting printed out wrongly. So we took out the diacritics. What we've done is we've taken all the 26 qualities of a devotee and we've put in how Srila Prabhupada, or in the case of the 11th canto, how the BBT translators translated those particular qualities into English. So you'll see that in some cases it's very, very similar, and in some cases it's slightly different. Like Akinchana in the fourth canto is translated as simple. One is without material possessions. One is non-possessive. So sometimes they're a little different. Sometimes they're exactly the same. I mean, Satyasara, for example, in Madhulila is truthful. In the third canto, it's accept Krishna consciousness as the highest goal in life. In the 11th canto, live by truth and gain strength and firmness from truthfulness. So it's somewhat different. I thought by having these different translations, we can get a more rounded, complete picture of these 26 qualities. We should also say that although Mahaprabhu and Lugan, etc., list these as the 26 qualities of the devotee, there are also other lists, other qualities of the devotee. Can you tell me quite a different list? I mean, obviously there's a lot of similarity and overlapping, but where else do we find the qualities of the devotee listed? The nectar of devotion, yes, where? I'm not asking specifically which chapter, but at the title of the chapter, you mean? In what context? In the context of the qualities of? Krishna, yes! So, how many qualities are listed for Krishna? 64, so God has unlimited qualities. We list 64, isn't that nice? So most religious and philosophical systems on the planet today, they just say God is great, but they list some. What are some qualities we hear from most religions?
Omnipotent.
Omnipotent.
Omniscient.
Great.
He knows everything.
Huh?
Loving.
Loving. Merciful. God's what? I'm missing the middle word.
Causelessly
merciful. Okay.
All-knowing.
All-knowing.
Creator.
Huh? The creator.
Unattractive.
I don't think you find that in most religions of the world. I haven't seen any.
Muslims kind of say that.
It's
the most beautiful, we can't even describe the beauty.
They say that, the Muslims. Angry. God is described in the Bible as angry. Yes? Vengeful. Punishing. Jealous. I am a jealous God. Is in the Bible.
All attractive.
We just said that and we just discussed that.
Righteous.
Righteous, yes.
Loving.
Righteous.
Loving.
Loving, imagine. Eternal.
Forgiving,
yes. So punishing and forgiving. So we do have in the Bible, the Old New Testament, the Quran, we do have some descriptions of some of the qualities of God. I don't think that all the 64 qualities are described. That would be an interesting study. If anybody wanted to do a study, what are the qualities of God as described in the Quran and the Old Testament and the New Testament, and compare that to Rupa Goswami's list of the 64 qualities of God. And of course, Rupa Goswami says that God has unlimited qualities, but that these are just some. But in reference to today's class about the devotee's qualities, what does Rupa Goswami say? That the devotee has how many of the 64 qualities of God? 55. Good. So we have 55 of the qualities of God. 55 of the 64 qualities of God. Well, but that's because we're tiny. We have them in minute quantity because we're minute, but we're still full of them. Okay? Just like this cup compared to the ocean, even compared to the Mediterranean, what to speak of the Atlantic, what to speak of the Pacific, is minute, yes? If you put this cup into the Mediterranean, you probably wouldn't see it anymore. It would be gone, this amount of water. But this cup is full of water, yes? It is. I haven't drunk it yet. You can't see if I showed you how it's filled. But it is full of water. So although this cup is minute compared to the ocean, it is full of water. So although we are minute, we have a minute amount of the qualities of God, we are still full with those qualities ourselves, yes? It's not like because I have a minute amount of kindness that I can't find it. Well, I don't have a minute amount of kindness. No, it's not like that. It's that I am very small, and so therefore, if I am full of kindness, if I'm completely full of kindness, the amount of kindness that I am completely full of is relative to God insignificant. Is that clear? Yes? It's not that my kindness is insignificant to me. Right? Okay. So we are full of 55 of the 64 qualities of God. What are the qualities we don't have?
We don't play.
You know, we might play flute. We might play flute. There are coward boys that play flutes, and if you are eternally a coward boy, my dear Kanchanvali, I will wonder, you might play flute. When we meet in the spiritual world, when Kanchanvali is there manifesting her eternal form, she might be playing flute. And some of the gopis play flute.
It's one of his four special
flutes. Well, he has a very special flute. So Krishna has a very special flute. So his flute attracts everyone in the universe, so although you might indeed play flute, you might very well play flute. There's gopis play flute, some coward boys play flute, so if you're one of them. Now, if you're not one of them, if you're one of the cows, then you probably don't play flute. But the flute that you would play if you play flute would not be attracting everyone in the universe. Although it would be attracting Krishna. They might just read it in one of Goswami's books where Krishna was saying that when he listened to one of the gopis, Sadhya, he listened to Sadhya playing her flute, that his own flute felt defeated by Sadhya's flute. Maybe that's in the Gajramada, I can't remember exactly. But so the coward boys play flutes, they play buffalo horns, but Krishna's flute is definitely special. When Krishna plays his flute, then the stones now can be driven forth after the stuff. What's another quality of God we don't have at all? We just really Well, that's talking about minute and great again.
Omnipotence.
If he has all potencies. Well, we also know, just like Narada Muni knows, but he doesn't, again, it's in a smaller quantity. So the liberated soul knows past, present, and future, but doesn't know it to the extent that God knows. So that's a question of quantity.
Is loving pastimes?
Yes, is loving pastimes with his friends. So of course, again, we as liberated souls have friends, and we have loving pastimes with our friends, but not a level of sweetness. We're not the center. Krishna is the center. He creates millions of universes, so we don't create millions of universes. We can create one universe as Brahma under Krishna's direction, but we don't create millions of universes. So some qualities of God we don't have. We're not all pervading, no matter if we're liberated, we're never in every atom. We're never all pervading. We can have many, many expansions. So this is explained by Srila Prabhupada in a letter, and it's explained in the Bhagavad Gita that a liberated soul can be in many places at once. And many different forms in many places, one's doing different things. And even we find, like in Chaitanya Charitamrita, we find examples of liberated souls who are, say, monkeys in Ram Lila and cowherd boys in Krishna Lila and associates in Mahaprabhu Lila. So we find souls who have different rasas and different eternal forms in different lilas simultaneously, but we don't find that the liberated souls are ever in every atom and everyone's heart. So that aspect of God, even as a liberated soul, we don't achieve. Just like Krishna said to Arjuna in the Bhagavad Gita, many, many births have passed, I remember all of them, but you do not. So that kind of omniscience we do not have, even in the liberated state. There is a difference between a soul and God. Yes? Okay. So sometimes people think, a liberated soul will have the same omniscience as God, and even everyone's heart, and but that is not the case. But we do have most of the qualities of God. Isn't that nice?
Mm.
But we're actually very nice people. We are very nice people. We're wonderful, in fact. These qualities of the devotee are not something to be achieved, in a sense. They're something we already have. That they're already there. It's not something, as Rupa Goswami says in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, Prabhupada talks about nectar devotion, they're not something to be achieved from some other source. It's not exactly that you take a course in these things and that you then you'll learn how to do them. Even though I teach a course, say, in forgiveness and I teach a course in humility, it's not that you don't already have them and you're going to get that. Like I don't have a diamond ring and I can go buy one. I could actually go on. Theoretically, you understand? So it's not that you don't have these things and then, okay, I'm going to go get them from some. They're already there. They're already who we are. They're who we are eternally. Where's another list of the qualities of devotees? Where else are the qualities of the devotee described? In the Bhagavad Gita, it's so nice to have a scholar in the audience. Surely there's more than just Kachin. Yes, one nice thing about Radhanesh is that people who really study Prabhupada's books, certain temples you go if you ask questions from the Prabhupada's books, you're just going certain temples it's where there's a mood of studying Prabhupada's books. So where is Bhagavad Gita?
Twelfth chapter,
yes. So text 13 to 20, Krishna lists the qualities of a devotee. And most of those have to do with being what? Most of the qualities listed in chapter 12, text 13 through 20 have to do with which of these 26 qualities? Anybody? Religion?
Humility.
Humility. Ah, there's a lot of humility here, yes. What else?
Tolerance.
A lot of tolerance, yes. What else?
Devotion to Krishna.
Devotion to Krishna. Look through the list and see which leads on the list. We'll find also in Bhagavad Gita 12, 13 to 20. Without material desire, definitely.
Steady mind.
Hmm?
Steady mind.
Steady mind, yes. Equality.
Yeah, it is in one context. Since Vaishnava sees the soul in every living being, but at the same time, Srila Prabhupada says that Vaishnava is compassionate to the soul. So.
Yes, but that would be indirectly. That would be extrapolating.
Yeah, okay.
But definitely stira, fixed in devotional service, manada, maitra is definitely there. What else in the Bhagavad Gita besides chapter 12 are the qualities of a devotee?
Chapter 8.
Chapter 8? Where?
13.
Chapter 8, text 13?
13. No, sorry, it's not chapter 8.
13, text 8. Yes. Instead of 8, 13. 13, 8. Okay, good. So, chapter 13, text 8 through 12, there we have the qualities of knowledge. And that also would describe some of the qualities of the devotee. Where else in the Bhagavad Gita?
End of the second
chapter. End of the second chapter, where Arjuna says, what are the qualities of those who are thus fixed in transcendence? How do they speak? What is their language? How do they sit? How do they walk? And there, Krishna is mostly talking about being equipoise and detached, right? Where else in the Bhagavad Gita? There's a chapter called The Qualities, The
of Demonic and
The oh, what's that chapter?
16.
So chapter 16, text 1 through 3, we have the divine qualities. Okay? Also in chapter 14, when Arjuna says, how do you achieve transcendence over the modes of nature, and what are the qualities of one who's transcended the modes of material nature? That's in 14, 22 to 24, 25. And then there's little bits here and there in the Bhagavad Gita, like in chapter 5, Vijayavanaya Sampani Brahmani Gabi Hasani Suni Shadasa Pakita Pandita Sana Darshana. Chapter 2, Dehina Sani Tade Hamaram Yogananda, the Tade Andhra Praktir, Dhiras Patra Nuvite. So anytime there's a description of a dhira, a sober person, or a pandit, that's also a description of the qualities of a devotee. So I'm bringing this up to say that this list of the 26 qualities of a devotee is not the only list. The qualities are described elsewhere in other places. They describe somewhat differently in other places. It's not that this is the list. Okay? In general, we will find that the same thing is described different ways at different times. So, and even you can see here that Srila Prabhupada is translating this list in somewhat different ways at different times. So the main point here is that we have all these wonderful qualities. This is who we are. So what's the problem? We have a problem, right? We have a problem that I think that we would all like to be this way. Right? We'd like to be kind to everyone. Everybody here like to be kind to everyone? Anyone here like want to be mean? Would we all like to be self-controlled? Anyone like it when I get out of control? Is that fun, getting out of control? Would we all like to only eat as much as required? Anybody even want to be fat?
Yeah.
You do? Okay, you fatter than you are. Maybe for you that would be eating as much as required. Maybe for you as much as required would be eating a little more. You may not have that problem your whole life. I had that problem until I was about 42, and then I had the opposite problem. Okay, would we all like to be expert in all activities? Wouldn't we like to be expert in all activities? That'd be nice, huh? Be able to be steady. We like to be able to be steady. Isn't it annoying when we get distracted? And modern society really increases the ability to get distracted, doesn't it? Get distracted by this, not really. Something else that we really might like. accepting Krishna as the only shelter, or at least all of us in this room, this room would like that. Yes, we would like that. So what's our problem? Faultless, not having any faults at all, would we like that? Anybody here want to have faults? So we have a problem, because it seems that this person that we would like to be is somewhere up in the sky, isn't it? So somewhere out there, this person I would like to be, this faultless, steady, sane, self-controlled person, is some kind of idealized person. And the person that I have to live with every day, I mean, other people have to live with me to some extent, but I have to live with myself 24 hours, is not like that. I seem to be full of mistakes and full of faults and not always peaceful and even injuring others and harming others and being attached to my material possessions, trying to work for my benefit instead of for other people's benefit. Oh my goodness. Wanting prestige, not being sympathetic, being inexpert, talking way too much, being silent, not necessarily being a balanced eater, endeavoring in ordinary worldly activities, disturbed by material desires, having so many other shelters, not being satisfied. That seems to be the person that I live with. Probably you don't live with that kind of person. I do. And this person that I live with all the time is also suffering. Yes? Anyone here who never suffers? That's true. So where does this suffering come from? This suffering actually comes from these bad qualities. All of our suffering comes from having these bad qualities. If I didn't have any bad qualities, I wouldn't do any sinful activities and I wouldn't get any bad karma, right? Does that make sense? If I was always kind to everybody. Like, you know, Narada Muni says to Dhruva Maharaj, he says, the way you get free from all material miseries is when you see somebody higher than you, you become joyful. When you see someone equal, you become a friend. When you see somebody lower, you become compassionate. He says, if you do this, you'll be free from all material miseries. Interesting. Our material miseries come from mistreating others. Not only mistreating others, but mistreating ourselves. It says that the demons are envious of themselves. Like, huh? What does that mean? I am a tiny part and parcel of God. I am a servant of God, and they hate that. I mean, I remember talking to my mother many years ago. She did all right at the end of her life. But anyway, I remember many years ago talking to my mother about how we're servants of God, and she says, no, I don't like that. She said, you know, when I go to pray, whenever there's prayers that say we're all the children of God and the servants of God, I don't say those prayers, she said. Because I don't want to be a child of God and a servant of God. I want to be independent. That means we hate who we are. Isn't that fascinating? We're actually wonderful. We're wonderful. We're full of most of the qualities of God. And yet we hate our very selves. We would rather be full of bad qualities and not be a small, surrendered servant of God. You know, we see this sometimes, right? I'd rather keep my so-called independence. I'd rather do what I want to do. I'd rather not have to listen to anyone, even if being like that fills me with bad qualities and makes me suffer. Do we see this sometimes? I mean, of course, this is how a criminal thinks. A criminal thinks, I would rather do whatever I want to do, even if doing whatever I want to do makes me an evil person and puts me in jail. I'd rather be a rebel in jail than a cooperative free citizen. So this is basically the mood of a conditioned soul. That I would rather be a rebel, even if it means I can't access my good qualities. Even if it means I have to tolerate having these bad qualities. Now, all the bad qualities we have, you can't really, in one sense, have a bad quality. In one sense, there evil doesn't really exist in a sense. Really, what evil is simply the misuse of something good. There isn't intrinsically evil. We do not have a philosophy that there's two gods, God and Satan. There's not a Satan. Rabindra Srikrabhu made the point that our vision of Lord Shiva comes the closest to some Christian or Muslim or Jewish somehow. Idea of a Satan. He even has his trident, right? He has his ghosts and hobgoblins, and he's the master of the material world, and he's the god of destruction. Right? He's the god of destruction. He's the person responsible for disease and death. Prabhupada says, when Krishna says, time I am, he's speaking in the mood of Shiva. All of the so-called evil in the world is being done by what? Shiva and his wife, Durga, and their hordes. But is he a devil? Is he like a second god? No, he's a Vaishnava. And he's a benefactor. He himself is not evil. So there isn't any competitor god who's a personality. So what is evil? Evil is misused good. If instead of drinking this water, I pour it on your head. I mean, you might like that in India in June, but I don't think in Belgium in October. So the water is not good or bad. The water is neutral. If I give it to you to drink, then it's good. If I pour it on your head in the winter, it's evil. Does that make sense? Right? Like when you go on the airplanes, they want to make sure you don't bring any weapons. But if you think about it, so many things could be used as a weapon. You know, your suitcase could be used as a weapon. Right? Your laptop computer, take it and hit somebody over the head with it. Yes? When people buy alcohol in the shops, that always interests me. And they bring that onto the plane, I mean, you could easily start a fire with a bottle of vodka. So, it depends what you do with them. Depends what you do with them, whether something is good or bad. I mean, even a knife. Do most of us have knives in our room? Does that mean we're all criminals? No, we're using it to cut our apples and our bananas. We're not using it, hopefully, to stab our roommates. So the knife itself is not evil. You know, and you can even cut a person with a knife and not be evil. Surgeons do it all the time. So what is evil? Evil is misuse good. And therefore you will find that in Goloka Vrindavan, there's counterparts of all of our so-called evil qualities, isn't there? Is there madness in love of God? Oh yes, there certainly is. Or like here, Midu, without a harsh mentality. So we were reading last time about Radharani talking with the bee. Was she speaking harshly to Krishna? She certainly was. We just heard in at the New Vajramandala in Spain, Kodamandala was giving a class and he was speaking very harshly about Krishna. It was quite humorous. So all the or not without possessions, non-possessive, akinchana. But, you know, Mother Yasoda, she thinks Krishna is mine. Doesn't she? Radharani thinks Krishna is mine. Krishna is my possession. Krishna is my son. Krishna is my friend. Krishna is mine. That mamata. Right? We even have like a benefactor to all living beings. So is there competition in the spiritual world? Yes. I'm going to touch Krishna first. Not necessarily, okay, you all stay in the back. No, they're competing. I'm going to touch Krishna first. And the gopis are competing. Krishna, come to my group. No, Krishna, come to my group. No, Krishna, come to my group. Right? The Madhya Rupa Goswami explains how, you know, some of the gopis go to the other gopis' relatives and complain about them. So each group, they're going to the other relatives and they're getting them in trouble. So the other group will have to go home and won't be with Krishna. Does not quarrel with anyone. Are there quarrels? Oh, definitely there's quarrels. Hasya pari hasya sambhasane. These loving talks, these friendly quarrels. Just like we do with our friends and our close family. Do we have joking quarrels? Do you do that? So there's quarrels. Okay. Humble. So much about the youthful pride of yogis. You know, if you like it very much. So all these so-called bad qualities, they have a perfection in Krishna service. So really what a bad quality means is I'm taking my good nature and I'm using it wrongly. Even our desire for freedom. Prabhupada says in the first canto that freedom is the need of the soul. So the whole thing that gets us in trouble, the whole thing that turns our good qualities into bad qualities, is I want to be free from having Krishna as the center. But without freedom, Prabhupada says in that purport, there's no bhakti. All bhakti exists on the platform of freedom. So the very thing that's the root of all of our bad qualities, that I want to be free, I want to be independent, is also the root of good qualities. Isn't that interesting? It's fascinating, isn't it? We are not nirvisesa sannivada. We are not voidists or impersonalists. The voidists and impersonalists say stop. I hear the quality of silence. So if we really meant silence, we wouldn't be having this class, would we? And there are, you know, religious, spiritual groups that practice this silence very literally. Some devotee sent me, I can't remember exactly, but it was about some yoga retreat where people go on this yoga retreat. Is that what it is? Where people are just silent.
Yeah. For 9 10 days.
9 10 days, just silence. Complete silence. Right, or I think the Quakers also have a lot of their prayers in the silence. Aravinda Sukhut wrote an article on Back to Godhead many years ago about going to a program of this one, a so-called yogi, who was advertising that if you practice his process in 6 months, you could become God. Probably we talk about a lot. I mean, when I first heard Prabhupada saying that people claim in 6 months you become God, I thought he was sort of making up an example. And then I saw these posters and I saw, wow, there are people who really say that. They say Krishna meditated and became God, Jesus meditated and became God, Buddha meditated and became God, and if you also meditate for 6 months, you can become God. That's what they said. Anyway, so Minister Guru went to their program, and the people were giving a talk. They weren't silent. And then when Minister Guru challenged them, he challenged their philosophy, they just backed up on the stage and went, words.
Words.
And he said, but you were speaking so many words. But anyway, so we don't understand this silence to be literally no sound. We understand the silence to be no material sound, no nonsense, no noise. Right? The demoniac like noise. The music today is turning more and more into noise, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Not all of them, but some people are becoming more and more attractive to something that they call music, but you listen to it and you think, well, where's the harmony? Where's the rhythm? It's just screaming. So the way that we develop these good qualities, my dear, is by turning everything back to Krishna. That is our bhakti process. The bhakti process is taking what we already have and cleaning it up and putting it back in its original form. Anything we see in ourselves that's a so-called bad quality, it's simply something that's good that's been twisted and dirty. Just like my grandson Vikram. So his glasses got twisted, right?
Yeah.
And they were on his face like this. So, you know, then we went to someone who untwisted them. Now, it's also interesting that he couldn't untwist them himself, right? If we untwisted them, tried to untwist them ourselves, we probably would have broken them. So he went to some very expert who was able to untwist them. So this is why we have the guru and the sadhus and the shastra that teach us how do we untwist and clean up these bad qualities to discover our real self. And the root of discovering our real self, the very root, is to change our identity. To change our identity from I am a material being trying to become the center and the lord of creation to I am a spiritual being who is a small servant to Krishna. Because all of our good qualities are already there in our identity, yes? As soon as I take up my real identity, all my good qualities are already there. I don't have to find them. Something like a person who plays a part on stage. So I always use the example that what I read sometime, the husband of the famous actress Meryl Streep. This article about the actress. And he was saying, I feel like I've been married to 1,000 women. Because when she would go to play a role, she's such a good actress, that she would really take on that role. I used to play in the Ramayana, and they gave me the part of a demon, Sri Panika. So I remember Aloka Mangala, who's passed away, but he would say to me, Urmila, you're being too good. You're not acting enough like a demon. You have to get more into the role. It's very difficult, actually, to get in the role of Sri Panika. Easy role to get into. But when you get into the role, he was expert at getting into the role of Ravana. And he was a very mild, mellow brahmachari. But when he was playing Ravana, well, he really thought he was playing Ravana. My son would hide under my sari in the theater performance. Mother, why did they tell me where he's going? You know, he'd be there, the mission. Sita. So he was nasty. But as soon as he took off his costume and his makeup, and he was Loka Mangala again, he wasn't like that. That nastiness wasn't his real nature. So we put on this costume and this persona of Ravana. Frankly. All of us. Frankly. I mean, very frankly. That's why we don't like ourselves. That's why we have such a hard time liking ourselves. That's why we say, well, I'd like to be like that, but I actually don't like this. Because when we're saying, I actually don't like this, we're looking at the Ravana costume. We used to spend about 4 hours putting on this Ravana makeup and Ravana costumes. You know, we've been spending billions of lifetimes putting on our Ravana costume and our Ravana makeup. And when we look in the mirror, we see Ravana. And as long as we're seeing Ravana, no matter how much we try to be nice people, we're going to fail because Ravana is not nice. You follow what I'm saying? You can't. You can't say, I'm going to be Ravana and I'm going to be nice. It doesn't work. So therefore, we have to change the identity. It didn't work. When I tried to be a nice Sri Panika, the whole play fell apart. We have to change our identity. That's the key. As soon as we change to our real identity, as soon as we say, oh, I'm a servant of Rama, I'm a servant of Krishna, I'm a servant of Lord Chaitanya, I'm a servant of Jagannath, I'm a spiritual being, then naturally, and this is why Srila Prabhupada says that we do not have to endeavor separately from these qualities. What we do have to make an endeavor for is to change our identity. Now, what's interesting is that endeavoring to change your identity involves getting these qualities. So if I'm going to be a servant of Krishna, then I need to act equal to all. If I'm going to be a servant of Krishna, I need to be non-possessive. If I'm going to be a servant of Krishna, I need to work for everybody's welfare. So it's integral to changing my identity. It's very integral. By the way, this concept of having everything once you change your identity solves the problem for everything you do. If you want to focus on your japa, start with changing your identity. Where does the mind wander during japa or during kirtan or during class? It wanders to things related to our false identity. Right? Oh, I have to do this today, I have to do that today, or this person said that, or that person said this, and I have this problem and that problem. But all of those things, if you analyze, all those things are related to our false identity, aren't they? If our mind wandered to our real identity, that would be focused in japa or kirtan. If my mind wandered to Krishna's form, qualities, and pastimes. Do you follow? If I wanted to know how to deal with somebody, how should I deal with this difficult person in my life? If I simply change my identity, I'm Krishna's servant. Well, what would Krishna's servant do? Just like the Krishna's have his graces, what would Jesus do? Which is a little funny, because it's not that I've been on Jesus. That doesn't quite work. But, you know, what would Krishna's devotee do? What would Krishna's servant do? What would a realized devotee do? Then immediately you know what to do. Is that... Yes? That makes sense? Yes? No? You're not sure? And then we're free of all the material miseries. Because then we're not doing any bad karma. We're treating everybody nicely, including ourselves. You know, Krishna says we should love ourselves. Yes, everybody knows this. Not sure. Bhagavad Gita says, Atma Rati. Who's Rati? She is somebody. There is a Rati Manjari. Yes, there is. Such a star. Rati is a wife of Cupid. The word rati refers to great love. The word means love. Atma rati, to love yourself. Krishna says to relish and rejoice in the self. Also, we have the word atma rama. What does rama mean? Satisfaction, happiness. To be happy with yourself. Atma rama. And he says atma tushta. Tushta means satisfaction, yes. To be satisfied with yourself. So this was Atma Tushta, Atma Rati, Atma Rama, to like yourself. So a devotee likes anyone, including himself, because they're also part of God. So we ask ourselves, what would somebody who really liked themselves, the real self? We can't like the false self. The false self is not particularly likable. But the real self is very likable. So if we concentrate on who am I, what is my real self? Then we will naturally manifest all of these good qualities. We will be kind to everyone, including kind to ourselves, and we will be faultless and we will be expert. So we have just a few minutes. Any one of these qualities specifically that anybody would like to talk about? Yes, please.
Hare Krishna. Actually, I would like to ask, I was just thinking, since we're talking about qualities, there is also this question of relative platform and absolute platform.
Oh. Okay, we'll go there. It's funny, that's usually what I talk about when I give this class. Generally, that's what I talk about. And I didn't talk about that at all today. So you missed out and you asked me, so now I'll add that to the discussion. Okay. Relative good qualities and absolute qualities, right? So again, we have a minute degree of the qualities, but we have them absolutely. So the liberated soul, the pure soul, the real soul, is absolutely equal to all and absolutely mild and absolutely non-possessive. In other words, we're full. Our fullness is small compared to Krishna, but we are full. Whereas a material person, a materialistic person, conditioned soul, does display relative good qualities, don't they? Mm-hmm. Of course they do. In fact, I'm sure that there are many completely materialistic persons out there who display relatively more of many or maybe all of these qualities than I do. And it's obviously, right? It's not, we can't say, well, everyone in the Krishna consciousness movement absolutely displays all these qualities all the time, and nobody outside of the Krishna consciousness movement displays any of them. Could we say that? Would that be honest? Would it? No. And there's places for Prabhupada says that the non-devotees, by non-devotees, by the way, we don't just mean people who aren't in the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. We mean people who don't accept and worship God. And Prabhupada would say the non-devotees also have many good qualities. But then there's that verse that if you're not a devotee, you have no good qualities. Because you're on the mental chariot. So what does that mean? So I can tell you my understanding of what that means. So let's take any of these. Sarva Upakraka. Sarva Upakraka. Working for the welfare of everyone, works for everyone's benefit, a benefactor to all the entities, benevolent, a well-wisher to all, always endeavoring as far as possible for the welfare of our others, dedicates his time to work for the welfare of all others. So let's say you have somebody who is doing things for others' benefit. And they're doing things for others' benefit. And all of a sudden, there's some circumstance in which they no longer care about anyone else's benefit. What kind of circumstance is that?
They get cancer.
They get what? They get cancer. Okay, that's a very specific example. So a person might get very sick, and then all of a sudden they start thinking only about themselves. If we think about ourselves, so we all try to work for others' benefit, correct? Who here tries to work for others' benefit? Nobody? Mm-hmm. Don't you all try to work for others' benefit? Who here tries to help others? Anybody, try to be helpful. You never try to be helpful?
No.
Your wife does that.
You have something to work on there.
Yeah, something to work on there. We'll try to tame you later. So I think, yes, we all try to help others, yes? Even those of you who are so shy, oh, I never try to help anybody, come on. Of course we do. But when do we get to a point that we don't really care about helping others? When our own welfare becomes threatened so much that we think, I better just help myself, forget about others. If you think about the last time, for me, I don't have to think very far back in the past, but if you think about the last time when you said, forget about others. I don't care if anybody suffers. Let them all suffer. It was a time when we felt our own self-preservation was threatened so much that we had to only care about ourselves even if other people were harmed. Does that make sense to everybody? Or if you think about, are we basically truthful? Viewers that would say I'm a truthful person. Are you truthful? I go, wow, you're really problematic people here in the audience. Are we honest people? I mean, are we here?
On what platform?
On one platform. I hope you're all honest. I mean, my raincoat's hanging up over there. It's a nice raincoat. I hope you're all honest people. So I think we're all honest people, yes? But there's sometimes we're not honest. That's why you're like, I don't know if I could say I was honest. I mean, does she know about yesterday? So if we think about it, under what circumstances do we become dishonest? When we're threatened, yes? When we think, if I'm honest in this situation, I won't get something that I need. And the greater the threat, the more likely we are to become dishonest. Is that correct? Yes? So are we really honest and are we really kind or are we really interested in self-preservation? Really interested in self-preservation. So because we're all civilized and we all have good mommies and daddies or uncles and aunts who trained us how to behave, therefore, we say, okay, the best way to get what I need is to be kind and honest. Little babies are not naturally kind and honest, generally. Little babies are very selfish. But we were trained. You know, if you want to get something, you have to share. We were all trained like this, yes? Wait your turn. Wait your turn. Wait your turn now. You'll get some. If you try to just take it all for yourself, you're not going to get any. But if you wait your turn, then you'll get some. Hello? Okay. If you're mean to your brothers and sisters, I'm going to take away your toys and put you in your room. You want to have toys, you have to be nice and share. We were all taught this, correct? Everybody, I hope you were. Hope you got some nice parents. So we were trained that for self-preservation, I have to be honest and kind. So we're honest and kind, not because we're honest and kind, but we're honest and kind for self-preservation. And the evidence of that is as soon as our self-preservation is no longer being achieved by being honest and kind, we switch to being dishonest and mean. So recently I got an email from a devotee that was full of meanness and cruelty and lies, accusing other people of false things in a very cruel way. This person did this terrible thing, this person did this, and it was lies. Just out of lies. And then the person wrote a follow-up email that said, I realized my previous email was, what was it? Cruel and mean-spirited. And I thought, then why did you write it? And then the person went on, but I had to defend myself. So this is the nature. I'll be kind, just like Kamsa. You know, Kamsa was very kind after Durga appeared. He said, I'm very, very sorry. I shouldn't have killed all your children. But it was their karma. So don't cry, don't blame me, it was just their karma. Right? But then he switched again. He couldn't make, he would be nice when he felt it was favorable for his self-interest, but if niceness wouldn't achieve his goal, he'd switch to something else. And this is what we do. We're nice, we're nice, we're nice. We're nice, we're nice, we're nice. We're good, we're good, we're good. And if that's not working, then we're not good. So we're interested in what works. We're not really interested in being good. So those are relative good qualities. Now, they're relative as to at what point we switch. So some people switch very easily. I'm sure you've all met people like that. You know, they're nice people, but it doesn't take much to make them into nasty people. I mean, little thing. Little tiny thing. All of a sudden, whoa! What monster did you turn into? You know, that Columbusur who looked like a cowherd boy, and then he turned into, showed his real form as a demon. So some people show their real form as a demon very, very quickly. You know, you bump into them in the line and they're ready to kill you. And other people, it takes a lot. You know, in more and more and more provoking situations, more and more difficult situations, they're still good, they'll still, and it takes a tremendous amount before they show an evil side, correct? So I understand this as the modes of nature. If someone's really in the mode of ignorance, then they'll show their bad qualities very quickly. If someone's in the mode of passion, it takes more. If someone's in the mode of goodness, it takes more. But even someone in the mode of goodness has a limit. Don't you read about these sages in the mode of goodness who lose it and become angry and curse somebody? Right? So even for these sages in Sattva, there's a certain point at which they jettison their good qualities. And I call that line fear. Fear kicks in. You know, I become afraid. My self-preservation becomes threatened. So therefore, anyone who still has that line of fear anywhere does not manifest in absolute good qualities. And that fear comes from the wrong identity. It comes from the fact that I think that I am this body and this mind. Because I can't be harmed. I never die. There's nothing that can harm me. So if I'm completely self-realized, then there's no fear. But I try to endure it. And if there's no fear, then one has absolute good qualities. Because there's nothing that will push a person into not having good qualities. Because there's no concept of self-preservation. Because I'm eternal and I can't be hurt. So therefore there'd be no inclination to, I don't have to do anything to preserve the self. Why do I have to do anything to preserve the self? The self is eternal. I don't have to be afraid of anything. Nobody can hurt me. Nothing can hurt me. I am indestructible and unhurtable. So there's no fear of anything, because anything that apparently hurts the false identity is not hurting me at all. When Ram kills Ravana on the stage, Lokamangala is not damaged. And therefore, a person in that consciousness has absolute good qualities. But to whatever extent we identify with this world, to that extent we have a lot of fear. And as soon as that fear kicks in, at whatever level, that fear, some people it takes a whole lot for it to kick in. I mean, if somebody's really in suffering, they may only demonstrate a bad quality once every 5 years. I've seen people who go 3-4 years without becoming angry. So if you have a lot of suffering. But still, there'll be some circumstance. Just like my baby came before Hari Das Thakur, and he wasn't attractive at all. There was nothing in the whole universe of illusion that attracted him. So I think for most of us that wouldn't be the case. You know, if the whole universe of illusion came before us, you could have anything you want in this world of illusion. We go, that So as long as that is there, then we have fear. And as long as we have fear, our good qualities are relative. In fact, in one sense, we don't really have them at all. We really only have self-preservation of the false self. We really just have various degrees of false ego. Therefore, what I request the devotees over and over again is, please stop defending your false ego. Because that's the whole problem. The whole reason we have these bad bodies and the whole reason we're suffering is that we are protecting and nourishing and defending our false ego. We are trying to protect the false self. Stop trying to protect the false self. Just stop. Just let it go. If someone says something nasty to the false self, even if it's a total lie, just forget about it. Why are we trying to protect the false self? We have to protect this body because it's Krishna's. You know, somebody tries to kill you, you can engage in self-defense. But why? We should protect our spiritual life, but we should not be protecting our pride and arrogance and false ego. It's just really bad. That's the whole problem. Let it die. Our real self is so much nicer anyway. When you let the false self die, then you'll really have a likable self. Why do we put energy into protecting and defending our false egoities? It's idiotic. But it's the defending and protecting our false ego that's the root of all of these factors. That's what transforms the good qualities into bad qualities. That's what makes our so-called good qualities relative rather than absolute. That is the whole problem. Is that all right? I usually go till 9 instead of 8:45, so we still have 5 minutes. Did anyone want to discuss a particular one of these qualities? Anyone specific quality on this list? Anybody wants? Does that answer your question?
Well, now I'm thinking, how does one not identify himself? I mean, there is knowledge, but...
Identify with the real.
How if you're not on that platform? If you're on the platform of the mind, how can you identify with your real self?
That is the whole process of Bhakti Yoga. And that is the question asked by Maharaj Purukit to Sukadeva Goswami, where? That's Maharaj Purukit asked Sukadeva Goswami, how, if I have a material mind and senses, can I engage in spiritual activities? How can material senses approach the Supreme? How can material mind approach the Supreme? How can material body approach the non-material? How can someone who's identifying with the body and the mind and the senses start to identify as the soul? That is the whole question. Yes? And that is bhakti yoga, isn't it? Then you have a whole science of bhakti yoga. So the simple answer is that the material world has two purposes. The material world, this is the answer given in that chapter, the material world has a purpose of keeping you in illusion, facilitating the desire to be in illusion. And it has the purpose of achieving liberation from illusion. That means the body, the mind, and the senses are designed for true different purposes. A key is designed to both lock the door and open the door. This body, this mind, and the senses has both purposes, and it can be used for either. Krishna says, among the senses, I am the mind. Your mind is Krishna. He says the mind can be the what or the what?
Friend
of the enemy. Even the body. Krishna says this is my energy. Even the false ego. Who is the false ego? A little hint, we talked about him earlier in this class. Shiva. And he is the greatest Vaishnava. Lord Shiva is the personification of false ego. And he is the greatest Vaishnava. And of course, he is on our altar in what form? In a picture, not in the deity. Advaitacharya. And what does he say? Chaitanya Dasamui, Chaitanya Dasa, Chaitanya Dasamui, Andra Dasha. I am a servant of Lord Chaitanya, I am a servant of Lord Chaitanya, I am a servant of Lord Chaitanya, and a servant of his servants. And who is Lord Shiva worshipping? Who does Lord Shiva worship? He worships Lord Ramachandra and Sankarsana. Particularly worships forms of Ram, Balaram, Ramachandra. So everything we have is also spiritual. Sarvakamidam Brahma. Everything is ultimately spiritual. It depends what you use it for. So this whole, the whole purpose of our International Society for Krishna Consciousness is to use the material body, use the material mind, use the sense of I am, and spiritualize it. So this takes practice. It takes intentional work. It takes an intention. Jivara Sarvaya Vijaya Krishna does. I am a soul, I'm a spirit soul, I'm part of Krishna. What would I do if I were in my real identity? Instead of just being reactive. Okay, if I were acting right now as a soul, what would I do? Oh, that's what I should do. Because that's who I am. Just like when someone has amnesia. And then you go and you had amnesia for 2 years. That's a funny story. Can I tell you that story? So he was coming to the temple, he was visiting the temple, and he wanted to join, but he felt he had too many material attachments. So he didn't know anything about Nisindadev, but he thought, be careful with Nisindadev. But he didn't know anything about Nisindadev, but somehow he thought, this is the right form of Krishna to pray to for my problem. So he went to Nisindadev and he said, please cut all of my material attachments so that I can surrender and join the temple. And a week after he said that prayer, he was found at the side of the road not knowing who he was. He didn't remember anything, his name, anything. And so a few days later, he moved into the temple. And I think it was about a year, maybe 1 or 2 years later, Prabhupada Swami, who was a spiritual master, said to him, it might be a good idea to try to find out who you were. Because he had no memory at all of his other life. And he said gradually he was able to reconstruct it except for that 1 week between the prayer and lying on the side of the road. He was never able to regain that particular memory. But when you have, I was talking about amnesia, when you have amnesia, other people may know who you are. So of course nobody knew who he was because he wasn't trying to find out who he was for a while. For 1 or 2 years. But you know, if you put up this picture, missing person doesn't know who he is. You know, amnesiac person does. So the relatives will come and they'll say, oh, you used to like this, you used to like that. You liked this kind of music, you like this kind of food, you like this kind of art. And then under their guidance, you try to act as who you are. So Srila Prabhupada, all the acharyas, they're coming and saying, this is the way you behave as a soul. You are merciful. You are equal. You are faultless. You are mild. You are non-possessive. You work for the welfare of God. Oh, that's what I do? Oh. You are compassionate. You are oh, that's the kind of person I am? Does that make sense? You like to chant Krishna's name. Oh, I do? You like to serve Krishna. Oh, okay. Is that all right? And then as we do that, then because that is who we are, then it gradually becomes real. And we gradually start to remember, oh yes, this is who I am. I really like this. And then one gradually starts to remember details of who they are, like whether or not you play a flute. You can let us know when you can play. You follow? So that would gradually awaken in one. Not only just in the general way that I can just serve him specifically. I like to serve Krishna like this, I like to serve Krishna like that. Is that okay? Prabhupada ki
jai. Urmila Mataji ki jai.